I don't like hiring anyone that's running from their position. I want you running to my position because you love it. And this is what you want to do in your career, not because you just hate what you're in. And frankly, I think if you're in that position, you should get out of that situation. I want to be really clear. That's not a good situation for you. If you're not being poured into, not being developed, you have no clarity as to how this thing's going to advance your career, you probably should not be in that role. But be really careful about just jumping into the next thing that opens up, because that's not necessarily going to make your experience that much better. And it certainly might not help advance your career.
Welcome to Conversations at Basecamp, the professional development podcast designed to help you confidently ascend the corporate climb. I'm Kim Havens.
And I'm Noah Reese, and we're the co-founders of Kahila, a digital platform providing leadership development for people on the rise.
This podcast is your exclusive look into our Basecamp for intentional career growth.
Each week, we'll dive into essential topics to master high-impact power skills, and we'll also decode leadership secrets and navigate game-changing trends to future-proof our careers.
So, whether you're a seasoned professional seeking to refine your approach to leadership development, or an ambitious person charting your course, Conversations at Basecamp empowers you with actionable insights and tangible takeaways.
Hello there, and welcome back to Break the Barrier, the leadership development and executive coaching experience brought to you by Kahila, especially for men of color. Of course, you know, my name is Raphael Saul, honored to be your program facilitator for this amazing four-month experience. And man, we've had a time over these last 4 months. It's sort of hard to believe that we've covered so much. We've engaged in so many impactful and transformational conversations. We've had our executive coaching. You've asked your questions. You've done your reading and your research. And throughout this program, it has been nothing short of thrilling to see the engagement and the growth of all of our amazing Kahila Knights. So once again, we're here around the round table for what is going to be an exciting discussion about making bold moves and taking those risks. Today, we are joined by Mr. Damian W. Wilmot. He's the incoming Chief Legal Officer of Bridge Biopharma. He's also the former Senior Vice President, Chief Risk and Compliance Officer of Vertex Pharmaceuticals. I'm reliably informed we do have some Vertex team members as a part of our program as well. Former Assistant U.S. Attorney of the District of MA and worked as a judicial law clerk on the state Supreme Court. Let me just shout out here real quick, Damian, attorney to attorney. Absolutely love the rounded professional career as someone who is a qualified attorney, but clearly has built experience and skills in several other areas as well. Director and member of the Nomination and Governance Committee of PBF Energy Inc. and the Executive and Audit Committees of Harbor One Bancorp Inc. Trustee and member of the Audit and Investment Committees of Fidelity Charitable, Chair of the Board of the New Commonwealth Racial Equity and Social Justice Fund, and Trustee and Chair of the Audit Committee of Trinity College. Yep, this is a long one. Recognized by Boston Magazine as one of Boston's 100 most influential Bostonians. But super happy to welcome to the Kahila Roundtable a very experienced and accomplished professional, proud Bostonian, Mr. Damian Wilmot. Hello, Damian.
Hey, hello. That was quite the introduction. Thank you for that.
Oh, really? Such a pleasure.
Glad to be here.
You've done all the hard work in being so accomplished. I just get the opportunity to share it with our Kahila Knights during our call today. So, Damian, tremendous career so far, tremendous career. I'm sure like any great professional, you're still going and you're still growing.
Still going, still grinding, for sure.
That's it for sure. But Damian, we were chatting just before about this whole idea of making bold moves and taking risks. And one of the challenges we often have, before we get to what the process of taking an informed, well-researched, well-planned-out risk looks like, there's often this tension, this struggle, Damian, between possibility or potential gain in the future and that possibility of loss. And many of us can identify, Damien, with being caught in the middle where this is a risk. I could go forward and take this opportunity. I could, you know, go for this. But then there's the possibility of loss, and I'm not sure how I manage myself in the midst of this tension. You know, what's your experience been like with that, Damien?
When I think about risk in your career, you know, for me, it's not, and I know what we're not talking about is throwing caution to the wind and not sort of making an informed decision, but it is about taking a calculated or making a calculated decision that might bring about a bit of change, right? And that change makes us uncomfortable. What you're talking about is really about the journey, about the unknown, right? You really don't know what's going to happen. You could lose it all, right? And that's the risk that you're taking on. It could be a bad decision. And so I think for me, what it's been, I go through a process by which to make that decision, but you kind of have to just poke out your chest a little bit and then just jump in and hope for the best, right? But, you know, and even in those situations where it's not working, get something out of it. And so what that could be taking on new responsibilities at your job, of course, or taking on a new job, working in a new department, all of those come with some risk. But hopefully before you've made the decision, you've done the research, you know, you talk to your mentors, right? I mean, my process is this. I talk to my cabinet of mentors and try to understand their perspective on, you know, what do you think about this opportunity? You know, what do you see as the potential upside to it? What are the potential downsides? What could I get out of this? What are the doors that it opens? What are the doors that it closes too? And just making sure I have a good understanding of that. I'll try to do the research on the people. Who am I going to be working with? What's their culture? You know, the person that I might be side by side with in the trenches, you know, how are they as a leader? How are they in those moments when there's a lot of stress? You know, you really want to understand that those sort of dynamics. You know, I'll do my own self-assessment. You know, what do I bring to the table in this new situation? What are my gaps? What are the things I might need to educate myself on, you know, to really have an impact in this new role? So I'll take a look at a lot of different angles and come up with my own pros and cons. And there might be a lot of cons. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, for me to make that decision, the pros have to outweigh the cons, or the potential upside needs to outbalance the downside. You know, there's economics in that too. You might be thinking about, am I going to make more money in this role or not? Is it a lateral move or not? So all those things that you have to factor in. And then at the end of the day, you're taking on that sort of risk and that emotional decision that you need to make. Frankly, it's just a muscle that I think I've built up over time that I just had to get comfortable with. It can be really unsettling for people. But I think if you've done the research and you've had those discussions and you really thought it through, you kind of have to trust yourself that you're making the right call in that moment. And I, you know, we're chatting before we jumped on and I was saying, I didn't always get it right. I mean, there were some times that, you know, I think I've got it mostly right. But there were some decisions I made that didn't go the way I was expecting them to go, right? And so one that comes to mind for me, you know, I was a partner at a law firm, and just even that process of becoming a partner in a Am Law 50 law firm, that took some time. It took a lot of my own personal investment to get there. And put it in some more context, the firm I was at, which was a fantastic global firm, the person who made, you know, black, you know, person who made partner before I did it in 1974. The next person was me, right? Wow. So here I am, a new partner at this firm. And I felt that I went through so much to achieve that. And here I was looking at a new opportunity and essentially walking away from everything I had built. So there was a lot of stress around that moment, but I made a decision to go to a company to be an in-house senior lawyer in this legal department at the company. And I did my research, and you know, I understood that there was some potential cultural issues, perhaps, and even some concern about, you know, its future business down the line. And of course, I didn't know anyone there, right? So you're taking on that sort of risk too. But I made the leap. I went to that place. And a month into that job, the person who hired me to be his number two lawyer, this is the general counsel, he hired me. He left. He left the company. Exactly one month in.
What?
And so here I was thinking, I just left my partnership. I had a book of business. I had clients. I put all that aside. Here I was. I felt like I was just holding the bag, you know, and it was an empty bag. And I had a freak out moment. You know, I was furious with this person that recruited me and got me, you know, in this position. And here I was kind of his guy and he left. Now, that was a moment that I had for sure. I mean, I think I threw my phone across the room. I was really upset.
Right.
And I probably called my wife next and said, "You will not believe what just happened today." And I got the news. I remember I was in China. I was in like Shanghai or something. I'm reading this thing. I gathered myself. I called one of my mentors, told him what happened. And his advice to me in that moment was, you know, take a beat. Keep your cool. Don't look like you're coming undone with this. And frankly, raise your hand and just say, "All right, what do you need me to do? How can I help?" And in that moment, with the GC gone, what happened for me was I started to get placed in these positions that I probably would not have been able to do had he still been there, frankly, right? So wow. I then became, for that period of time, counsel to the board. I started taking all these different responsibilities. So this moment that I thought I just blew up my career actually turned into some interesting opportunity. Now, I didn't stay there that long. I ended up leaving that place and then going to Vertex. But it was a learning moment for me for sure. And I'd say what I did learn in that moment about myself, and it really tested it, was you need some resilience in all this. So, you know, there's risk, but resilience is it's another R word that you need in that mix too.
So, Demi, you've given us a lot to unpack there. What I love about how you started is you're talking about the strategy to risk. So what we're talking about when we speak about bold moves isn't about treating your career like a lottery ticket. You know, it's just like taking a wild gamble. But you've built strategy that allows you to take sort of informed risks or well-considered, well-thought-out risks that are hopefully, you know, all things going according to plan, engineered to help you improve or grow from one professional level to another. And as you've shared, it doesn't necessarily always go in a linear path, but it can still sort of work out. How do we address our risk tolerance? So I know, like, if you're a beginner stock trader, sometimes they give you these general tests to kind of assess your level of risk tolerance to determine the types of trades you should engage in, right? Just drawing that as an example to sort of figure out, I'm a professional, maybe mid-career, maybe 7, 10, maybe even 15 years in. I've built experience. I have some capital. I've got some relationship capital as well. But I don't necessarily see myself as risk averse. I don't necessarily see myself as, you know, highly open to risk either. How do I measure what my risk tolerance is? Because I do want to maybe move out of my comfort zone, but I don't want to sort of just be throwing myself out into the middle of the ocean either.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And you know, I think often we might even be in that position of being the, you know, quote unquote breadwinner for our household too, right? So you might be in that position of, can I take this risk on? And not just put at jeopardy or, you know, or in some sort of to upset the balance with my career. I could do that with my household, right? And then, so that's a lot of pressure. I say for me, it's a great question, you know, if you think of it from a stock perspective. But I would say from a risk perspective, when I think about myself, my whole career has been improbable. I mean, I'm a black man in this country, you know, let's start there. And I'm the son of immigrants who did not have a high school diploma, let alone a college degree, right? So every decision I've made has had some bit of risk to it because I didn't know what the outcome would be. So maybe in some ways, I'm a risk taker. I don't think I've been that risk adverse. I just make sure that my decisions are risk informed. And so where I am that balance, I'm not sure. But I would say, I mean, if you think about what we're all probably doing in our spaces, you're every time that you suit up and head into your place of work, you're taking on some risk. And so you likely don't even have many examples to go off of. And you're just going on sort of intuition and your gut and just what you've learned along the way. And so I would say lean into that, trust it. Again, do the research you need to do before you make the decision, but you have to trust your gut at the end of the day. Is this the right call? You know, it's like sitting in a couch before you purchase it. Does it feel right? If it feels right, let's, you know, go with it and write it out.
So I want to get to red flags in a minute, but before I get to red flags, I actually want to go to green lights. Okay. So you spoke about your mentors, your cabinet of advisors, you know, your mentors and so on, people you bounce things off to get their perspective and their feedback.
Sure.
And I'm not necessarily looking for generalizations here, but what have been some of the things that when faced with an opportunity for you, when you saw it, you were like, you know what? If I had a checklist, I could check this off and say, yep, that's a positive. Yep. That's a positive.
Sure.
What are some of the green lights for you when you're examining or assessing a possible opportunity?
Yeah, there's the sort of the hard evidence and the soft evidence too, right? So that, you know, I if it's a public company, you know, to really get really granular, I'll look at their public filings. I'll look at their balance sheet. I'll look at, you know, what are they saying to the street? If it's, you know, I'm in biotech, I can look at what's in their pipeline and really get really in the weeds on what are the prospects of this company long term? Are they on the upswing? Do they seem to have a sound business strategy? I really try to understand that and read literally everything I can about that company. Again, you have a lot more access to information if it's a public company. You can find a lot of information on everything from Yahoo Finance to you name it, their own website. I'll go pretty deep and I'll dig in. Most companies will post information about their executive team. I want to understand who's on that team, and I'll look up their backgrounds. I'll search what I can on LinkedIn or something else, like who are these people that I might be in the trenches with, and really try to understand it at that level. If you're being recruited, let's say it's a new opportunity, you're being recruited, and now that would be kind of an external move. You know, you lean on those recruiters. They have a lot of information. Try to understand from them what's going on in this space. What's their culture like? If I have someone who's been in that company or is still there or had been there, I'll ask them. And you can, you know, this LinkedIn world is really helpful because you can find connections to companies and figure out, you know, what is it like to work in this place? What is that person like? So I'll try to dig in and just get some really hard data along that front. But on the softer piece, if I'm at that stage of trying to map out my career, let's say I'm trying to get to point Z. Does this help that narrative? Does this, you know, in my journey to getting there, does this advance things for me? Does it move my career along? I want to understand that. And so sometimes it's hard to really assess that just by yourself. So talking to your cabinet of mentors can really be helpful, particularly if one of those mentors has done what you're trying to do. And just run it by them. I'm looking at this role. This is what the size of the company. Here's what the responsibilities will be. Here's the size of the team I'll be leading. It might pay less money. I've done those moves too.
Yeah.
I've taken on a position where I was making far less money than I have been making. But I did it because of what the scope of the job was. And I thought it would expose me to certain things that I could develop skill sets that I need to get to that next thing that I'm after. And my view was always, you can always make money. I mean, so, but you might not always have the opportunity to develop the skill sets at the right time when it comes up. And so I try to look at all of those things. Raphael, I don't know if that's responsive, but that's what I'm trying to do at a kind of ground level.
It is. And I'd love us to swing that to capture also bold moves within your organization. So sometimes the bold move you want to make, and maybe you have some experience with this as well, as someone who's gone, if I use my, put on my legal hat, as someone who's gone from junior counsel all the way up to partner, you want to swing some big moves to maybe move from one department in your company to another, or from independent contributor to now a people leader. So you're not necessarily going to swing to an external organization. I want to figure out how I can build up sort of the guts and maybe build the perspective and so on to make that big shift internally within my organization.
Yeah, I think there, you know, lean into the internal network. Like, you want to understand, all right, is this a new position or not? Let's say it's not a new position and it's one that's existed. Who was in that job before? Why are they no longer in that job?
That's good.
What have they done with the job after they were in it for some period of time? Who's the manager there? Who are your peers going to be? All those sort of things you want to really try to assess to make a decision of whether, will this be a good situation for me? Now, you have to measure that sometimes too, because you could hear back nothing but negative feedback about the people that you might be working with. That doesn't mean your experience is going to be negative, but it's at least a data point you want to understand before you make that decision. It could turn out to be incredibly positive, but you want to understand those dynamics before you go into it. And so kind of the internal moves are almost a little bit easier to get information, because you can really tap into that local network to understand, all right, how do I think this is going to play out? And, you know, you can kind of look at history to give you some indication of how that might go.
All right. So let me ask you a tough one. How do I distinguish between I am fed up and this is probably a good risk for me to take? And I'm not saying necessarily that sometimes getting fed up doesn't point you in the right directions, because I know sometimes it does, that level of dissatisfaction or discontent.
Sure.
But sometimes we might just be pushed by a feeling of being fed up. And then we start to categorize this risk as being more positive than it might actually be.
Yeah. Oh, no, man, that's such a good question. you know, I am in a position to hire a lot of people. And I got to tell you, I don't like hiring anyone that's running from their position. I want you running to my position because you love it. And this is what you want to do in your career. Not because you just hate what you're in. And frankly, I think if you're in that position, you got to be really careful, because I get it. You can get really frustrated in these jobs. The reality is most people are not very good managers, right? Because, you know, companies tend to promote individual contributors who perform well, not based on the promise of their managerial capabilities. So they'll promote someone because they did their job really well, but they're a terrible manager, right? And so you have those dynamics, and I know it can be miserable if you feel like you're not being developed, or frankly, if you're even being denied development opportunities, you know, that your peers are getting opportunities that you're not. And so for me, definitely have your eyes open, your head up, looking for the right opportunity. Like, if you're in that situation, you should get out of that situation. I want to be really clear. That's not a good situation for you. If you're not being poured into, not being developed, you're not, you know, you have no clarity as to how this thing's going to advance your career, you probably should not be in that role. But be really careful about just jumping into the next thing that opens up, because that's not necessarily going to make your experience that much better. And it certainly might not help advance your career. So for me, it's whenever I, you know, mentor folks who come to me and they're looking at those sort of decisions and they hate their current job, but there's this thing that opened up, I really push them on. Remember you told me a month ago you wanted to do this thing in your career? Explain to me how doing that gets you there. You know, help explain it to me, because it seems like you're trying to convince yourself that this makes sense. But, you know, convince me of that. And I think that's hard for folks, because it's hard when you're in it. You have to almost, you know, build up courage to go into work in the morning. That's a tough situation to be in and do that job every day, waiting for the right thing to open up. But be careful about just jumping into something because it's there.
Yeah, you know? So good. So good, Damian. So I want to go back to your experience of walking out of your partnership and heading into this in-house role. And then, of course, things kind of getting turned on their head. And I want to use that as a segue into red flags. And I'm not suggesting that this was a bad experience, even though it didn't quite work out the way you wanted it to. But looking back on it now, you know, they say, at least in the Caribbean, hindsight is 2020.
2020. I don't
know if that carries, but yeah. So looking back on it now in hindsight, Damien, do you think there were any red flags there that you may have missed? Or was this just like a unicorn? It just was great and then was completely different to what I expected.
Yeah. And linking it to the previous question too. So, you know, here I was a partner at the firm, and not to bore folks with law firm dynamics, but law firms, they're not the warm and fuzziest places to work in, right? So it's, it's very, as a service providing provider industry, you know, everything's tracked by the minute, 6 minute increments to be exact. And so you're constantly in this billing mode. And once, you know, when I was an associate, you're just working on matters that the partners bring in the work. Once you're a partner, now you got to bring in the work. And so it's this dynamic that shifts where you're not just being a pure lawyer, but you're like a salesperson, which I didn't love doing. I don't love constantly needing to sell my services, right? And I'm a litigator by training. So, you know, selling litigation is not, you know, not the greatest position to be in. No one really wants to be in litigation. I really like the firm, I like the people, but I wasn't loving what I was doing in the moment. And so when the position came up, you know, there's probably some red flags I ignored because I thought, and I looked at a number of in-house roles and I said no to a lot of things, but I really wanted to be in life sciences. And I turned down things at banks and other places that just didn't interest me. And then this life science company comes up and I just thought, well, this could be really interesting. And one of the red flags, I think, I'm not sure if I ignored it or didn't fully appreciate it at the time, but one thing I came to realize I would never do again is working at a subsidiary of a larger parent company, right? Because decisions aren't necessarily made at that subsidiary level, it's made at the parent level. And so that's a frustrating place to be in if you're a senior decision maker and then your decisions are final. So those are some things that maybe have become red flags for me where I would avoid those for me. I would avoid those roles. But again, I didn't fully appreciate that dynamic before going into that role. That's one, you know, and there were some others too. I think, you know, the person who left a month into the job, it would have been great if he had told me, and maybe I should have asked, do you enjoy working here? Right?
That would have been a good question to ask.
How's it going for you? Yeah. Because I can tell you that caught me by surprise. And then another point too, you know, there was a lot of interest in some parts of my legal practice in the interview process that I should have picked up on that's why they wanted me. Because the second I touched down at the company, I was on a plane to Shanghai. And so there were just some things that were going on that I wish I had asked. What's happening internally? Why you need someone with my experience so badly? I didn't ask that question. So all those things kind of came to light once I was in the door. And so I think I just know now what questions to ask before I jump in on something.
I love that. And I know our Kahila Knights are note takers. So I think that's a good point to take note of, that the key to taking better risks is asking better questions. And we don't want to get caught in the feeling of the risk and not ask the questions that we ought to ask. So I want to share this experience with you, Damien, and use it as a segue. It's something that happened to me when I was in high school. In high school, I was sort of always a top performer, but there was this tension between being the class clown, because I loved making people laugh and fooling around, and still performing really, really well. And I remember one of my teachers at high school came by the classroom. I was standing on the desk, and I went to this high school with a lot of persons who were not from the same ethnicity as I was. So there were, you know, a number of white students and so on around. And here I am on the desk performing, everyone's cackling and laughing and all that. And after he called me down, I really thought that I was about to get, you know, punished or some disciplined in some way. And he pulled me into a corner and he said, I want you to look around at all of these students you're performing for. All of them, the phrase he used was, they have their bread buttered on both sides already. Mm. Right? Yeah. You're out here now trying to make something happen for yourself out of your own family line. Look at you and look at them, basically. Right. And don't let them make you a fool. And from then, I've always had this consciousness about my ethnicity, about the challenges and opportunities. Now, I'm in a place where ethnically I'm in the majority, but resource-wise, the minority holds the majority of the resources. And so I'm using that as a backdrop for the question. You're in the legal profession, but more broadly, life sciences and biotech and lots of different nuances in there. As a person of color, what have been some of those challenges that you've had to navigate that have been difficult for you, but have been in the minority, when perhaps you feel like I did at that time, you're not taken as seriously as you ought to be taken based on what's in here and even what's in here? How have you navigated the experience of being that minority, that person of color, but carrying the skill, carrying the goods, but you've still got some obstacles you need to push through in order to move ahead?
These are great questions, Raphael. And that's a deep one. I think it's, I mean, the unique challenges we have, you're hinting at a few of them. One, these roles can be really isolated, you know, where you're often the only one in the room. Right? That's pretty often for me. The higher up the corporate ladder you climb, unfortunately, in our country, that's going to be the case. You know, I'm on a couple of boards, and one of the companies I'm on the board of, they take your photo, your director photo, and they put it on the wall at the company. And this company has been around for over 100 years. And it's just pictures and pictures of just white men. And then there's me.
And then you. Wow.
And so you're often in that position. And on that last point, you will still find yourself in 2023 going to 24 that you might be the first Black to do whatever it is you're doing at your company or in your city or something, which is crazy, but that's true too. And so I think what comes with that is a pressure, internal and external too, to succeed, right? Because you feel like all eyes are on me and there's so much on me succeeding, because if I don't succeed, you know, I'm going to make it harder for the next one behind me or whatever other thing that comes into your head. And I think that pressure manifests itself in different ways. For some people, it sort of stirs up that imposter syndrome too, right? You know, I probably shouldn't be here. Maybe they'll find out that I only understand this stuff that, you know, 75%, and these guys seem to understand that more than me. Some people start to really question themselves in those moments. And I think there's a fatigue that comes with being the only one in the room too, where, you know, putting aside imposter syndrome, you know, you're the one who feels like, you know, you're the representative of all the Black employees in your company, right? And that you need to speak on their behalf, and you got to be everyone's mentor and counselor and advocate. There's a bit of fatigue that comes with playing that role. And of course, all of that's on top of just doing your job well, and then dealing with your own stress of how am I advancing my own career and how am I getting developed? And then if you have a family, then you throw the personal stuff on there too. So it's a lot, right? It's a layer cake of issues, right? But, and you're talking about the code switching. It's like yet another sort of stress, you know, sometimes the mask that we feel that we need to wear in our workplaces, because of those eyes on us. I think that for me, the way I've dealt with that, that's real stress. I mean, the way I've dealt with that, it's become so cliche, but the whole, you know, put on your mask before, you know, like the airplane warning, put your mask on before.
Yeah.
I know everyone, it's been played out. Everyone always cites that, but it's so true though. You have to take care of yourself first and foremost. And so So I try to focus on my physical and mental health first, because if that's not straight, you're of no help to anybody, right? Not at work, not at home, whatever it is. So you got to take care of yourself first. And whatever that is for you, for me, it's, you know, getting up early and getting on the bike or working out or whatever that is. But it's so important. And if you're in a place too where you've got to travel a lot and you're not home often, man, you got to take care of your health, because hotel living is not healthy living. And I got plenty of stories about those moments where, you know, God was tapping me on the shoulder, just saying, you got to pay attention to this, because if you don't, this could go a different direction. So you have to make sure you're on top of that. But support systems are important too. You know, I'm fortunate that my younger brother is an executive at a company. I can kind of just let my hair down with him. I'm a part of different groups where I can do that with, because again, these jobs are so isolating. Finding people who are going through the same experiences as you is not easy, but those groups are out there, right? And you might find them if you're in a fraternity, lead into your fraternity. If you're, you know, if you just meet a bunch of brothers or whatever it is, like pull that group in as a support group, you know. But I have different pockets of people that I lean on where I just need to have that moment where I don't always feel like I can do that in the workplace, right?
Yeah.
That I can, you can kind of just have the primal scream moment. You can't always do that in your workplace. When we do it, people start to look for the door, you know, it's, yeah. And so, so I'm 6'3". If I start looking tense and upset, people start to look for the exit. So, but you need to have those moments where you can vent and you can do it without judgment. And so you need to find those groups where you can do that with. And if that's your family, your fraternity, church, whatever ad hoc group of folks together that you can do that with, do that. I have everything from chat groups on my phone where we all text each other, and some, and these are pretty senior people. Your CEO at a company will send a text in this group saying, "You won't believe what just happened today." Sometimes you just have to be able to do that without any judgment. So that's how I've dealt with that sort of stress. You know, you find these outlets to let that go. So anyway, I might have spoke past your question, but
no, I think you gave great context around it, because I think the second part of it is having realized that or having had that experience.
Yeah,
how do we move forward from that? And I think what you've given us is a good approach in the form of our support system, however that's structured around us, and the avenues that we deliberately create for us to sort of be unapologetically Black, Brown, Indian American, Asian American in a way that's healthy and healing for us, especially where we have to make adjustments in our professional space. So we've got two questions I want to get to, Damien, in our Q&A section. So our first participant asks, risk analysis is seemingly a crucial pillar for Black and Brown males in corporate America. Can you speak to how to resolve the cognitive dissonance of having a sound process of assessing risk, but the results then do not resolve in your favor? So you've got a great strategy, a great process for approaching risk. But as a Black and Brown male in corporate America, the results don't resolve in the way that you hope they would. How do you resolve that?
I guess I maybe try to push on the question a little bit. I can't say I agree with that absolute that it,
go ahead,
that it doesn't always work in our favor. You might be taking on more risk. You know, it might be a riskier endeavor than, say, your straight white male counterpart who might apply for a job or a position with only 50% of the qualifications for the role. I agree with that. You know, there's that construct. But I don't think it's an absolute that it's not going to work in your favor, right? And so at the end of the day, we take on these roles, we take on these responsibilities. Again, we don't know how it's going to turn out, but what you're trying to do is just put yourself in a position to perform and do your best work. And I do think, and maybe I'm Pollyannish about this, but I think if you at least can do that part of it, that's a good chunk of it. It's certainly a majority of it, you know, getting the opportunity to get at bat and swing. If you're hitting that ball, I do think that that gets recognized. It's just getting up to bat. That's the issue that we tend to have. And so if the risk is, do I go up to bat or not? I say go up to bat and take that swing. And again, if it doesn't work, my hope is that at least you've learned something from that experience that you can take to the next thing. But that's, you know, that's at least how I measure the risk piece, you know, and when I'm looking at an opportunity, how to like make sure these opportunities get presented to you. It's like a whole nother discussion. But to me, you know, we're talking about making that decision in the moment. I'm always willing to bet on myself and take that on.
Yeah, love that. Love that. I really hope that provided value to the person who asked the question. And it does come down, I think, Damian, to how we view the outcome ultimately as we're taking the risk. Because I think we can have a very narrow perspective on the outcome. And if it doesn't conform to that, ultimately, then we might feel that, as the participant said, it hasn't worked out in our favor. But that narrow perspective can sometimes stop us from seeing what the broader lessons, opportunities, avenues for growth, and so on, there might be that are adjacent to the path.
And to beat the baseball analogy to death, I'm not a baseball player, so I don't know why baseball popped into my head.
Go for it.
But if you're in a position that you're like, I'm at bat and the umpire's calling strikes, so I'm hitting the ball and the pitcher's cheating and everyone, you know, it's the game is not set up in my favor, you're in the wrong game. Like, you need to get out of that situation. I mean, so I at least have felt that while things weren't necessarily, you know, they weren't stacked in my favor for sure, I still decided, you know, I can't just not take on the risk. I got to take this on. So whether that was, you know, I've done all sorts of crazy things in my career that I probably had no business doing. You know, I ran HR for a bit. I'm not an HR professional. I ran quality assurance. But I took these things on, not knowing much about them. But again, because I saw at least, hey, here's how this thing might help me develop these skill sets. And this is how this thing might almost, you know, redefine my brand internally if I take this on. And if I take it on and I'm successful, then this is great. But I decided to make those calls because I felt that if I didn't do it, I would have just been left in that narrow box that I probably was already in.
Is there the, if I take it on and I win and I succeed at it, it's going to be absolutely epic. If I take it on and I don't win, maybe people didn't expect me to win anyway. So,
right. But I think when you take these things on, it's setting those expectations at the beginning, right? And so it's, you know, in addition to doing all your research of do I do it or not, once you then are deciding to do it, like that whole process of, all right, what does success look like? Let's have some clarity about that before I do this thing. And negotiating that is really important. And then hopefully you're just succeeding whatever you set that the measure of success is for. But when I took on those roles, I for sure tried to at least set expectations as to, all right, here's what to expect. Here's what you're asking me to do. And I felt I could comfortably hit those expectations. And I was just trying to go well above that. That's key. You can't go into these things with a ton of ambiguity.
Yeah. Following you. Do you take the Richard Branson approach of if someone gives you an amazing opportunity, you say yes and figure out how to do it later?
Absolutely. Probably every time. Now, there's some things I've said no to because it just was not, it just, I didn't see how it advanced my own career journey. I didn't see it. And so there are many things I've said no to, you know, when you're in the company and an internal opportunity comes up, like you got to make sure it works for you. It might work for that leader who's asking you to do it. Mm-hmm. And you might be a high performer and they're thinking, oh, Raphael will crush this. Let me give it to him. And you're thinking, how does this help me? You know, you know, you have to really weigh that, you know, and maybe it helps you by impressing that leader. And then the next thing that comes up, they'll have you in mind. But there are certainly some things where I looked at it carefully and thought, this doesn't advance anything for me. And I said, no.
Yeah, love that. Love that. All right. So last question from one of our attendees. This is in the context of you as partner at the firm, your process for going about selecting your clients and building your portfolio of stakeholders. Was there a particular criteria that you used when you were looking to build that out? I know you said you are a trained litigator, figuring out how you sell litigation.
That's right.
This person for it. So what were some of the strategies perhaps that you used, or maybe key criteria as you were working towards building that clientele?
Wow. Yeah, that was a long time ago. But I'd say, number one, can you pay my rate? That was one thing. And so our clients tended to be more corporations than individuals. Represented some individuals here and there, but you know, law firm rates tend to be high. You're not normally in a position, even as a partner, to negotiate those rates down. You can maybe give some discounts, but that's a longer discussion about how law firm fee structures work. So that was probably the number one issue. The challenge was one of my peers could just lean into their family network, right? You know, like their dad's uncle their dad's best friend from college or something is the CEO somewhere. And then lo and behold, they have like a book of business from that company. And so there's a lot of those things happening, right? Or someone just gets, adopted by a senior partner who's about to retire, and they just, give them their book of business.
Yeah.
Shockingly, that doesn't happen to a lot of Black folks in law firms, right? You know, for a number of reasons, we don't have the numbers, but also I think there's just a cultural thing in these firms where we don't tend to be pulled into the fold in that way. But what I did was I tried to get exposure to people who made those decisions at those companies. And the way I did that was, attending conferences, joining boards, being in the mix with business leaders, right? You know, there's a tendency with lawyers to hang out with lawyers, which is fine, but they're all trying to get the same work. So to me, I was trying to expose myself to business leaders who can make hiring decisions with respect to their legal services. And so that worked better for me than going to an ABA conference. Instead, I go to some business conference and try to be the only lawyer in the room and at least get exposed that way. And then being on the boards and committees and those things, similarly, you get exposed to business leaders and then they can kind of see, how do you think? How do you work? And so when something would pop up for them, they were thinking of me. And so that's how it started. And then there's a referral network. It gets to be a lot, but it's a lot to cultivate that. And it takes a lot of time. And so I was doing it. I did it well enough, but I didn't love it.
Yeah, I got you. Hear you loud and clear there. Damien, it's unbelievable to me that an hour has already flown by. I can't believe it. It was such a great conversation. I am indebted to you for sharing your experience, your advice, your strategies for thoughtfully and strategically approaching professional risk as it connects with our career development and our ultimate goals that we want to achieve. Thank you so much, Damien. You've been amazing. I want to encourage all of our team. Yep, it's been a pleasure. I want to encourage everyone just to go make sure you follow Damien on LinkedIn, connect with him there. Damien, thanks for investing a portion of your most valuable resource, your time, with us here in this Men of Color program. It's a special one for us, and we don't take it for granted that people like yourself take time to share with us here on this platform. So thank you so much, Damien.
Hey, thank you. Much appreciated. And pleasure to meet you, Raphael. Appreciate the time.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Damien.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate you choosing to spend your time with us. If you love this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you'd like more information on how we empower professionals mid-climb, visit our website at kahila.com. That's KAHILLA.com.
And as we say at Kahila, step up into your boldest self, and while you're up there, reach down and help another person up.